Hello, everybody. Nicholas Snow here. So indie filmmakers and film fans are rejoicing at Seed and Spark, which is a crowdfunding platform, but also it helps filmmakers distribute their art as well. I know I have lots of film fans in my audience, so you're going to want to stay tuned. By the way, for point of reference, it is July 16th, 2015, but this show remains online in perpetuity, so you can always listen to it and share it. But if you are listening to it on the day of origination, there's an event happening at Outfest, I believe, tomorrow, and you might want to head to it if you're in the LA area. At any rate, joining me on the show today is entrepreneur, actor, and filmmaker Emily Best, who, with business partner Eve M. Cohen, founded Seed and Spark, a crowdfunding site specific to indie filmmakers, acting like a registry system that shows potential backers a budget determined by exactly what items are needed. The two came up with the idea for the site while working on a film together in 2010 after experiencing the need for additional funding firsthand. Both Emily and Eve are deeply rooted in the indie filmmaking scene and passionate about empowering up-and-coming filmmakers. And I can hardly wait to talk to Emily after this.
I want to give a big shout out of thanks to all my advertisers. You'll hear the commercials during the show. If this episode had a presenting sponsor, you would be hearing their commercial right now at the beginning of the show. For information on how to secure this sponsorship, or for the contact information for all my advertisers, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on the advertisers link in the main sub menu. Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revivals. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revivals. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the snow, show, celebrating his fourth decade as a multimedia entertainment activist, reaching millions of people worldwide, Nicholas is definitely a leading primo promo homo on the go-go. Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just drifted into your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
And thank you once again for tuning in. This month, I began the fourth year of this podcast, and The reason I'm thanking you, the listeners, is because in just over 3 years, earlier this month, my cumulative listens for the show surpassed 1.8 million. So 1.8 million of you have listened to the show since I went on the air. That's very cool. And my listeners know I love to go to film festivals. I'm an actor, and I also have been an entertainment journalist for decades. So I love to spotlight filmmakers, but people who empower filmmakers. So my guest today is so perfect for my audience. And without further ado, I'd love to welcome to the show Emily Best. Hi, Emily. How's it going?
Hi. Very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So I know that you are like in, you're in, involved with Outfest this week, the LA Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. I'm always impressed when anybody has time to do anything else except the film festival when it's going on. So thanks for taking the time to be with me. Now, I do know that there are some people that will hear this show today. So why don't you talk about specifically what you and your colleagues are doing at Outfest? I believe it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow at Outfest, with our partner at G Technology, we are hosting a workflow roundtable for filmmakers, because G Technology is really, we've been working together to help G Technology really understand the needs of the independent film community, because G Technology builds one of the most important products that powers what we do, which is the hard drive, right? And the hard drive sounds super boring until you understand that a filmmaker spends so much time and energy, you know, writing and fundraising and developing and putting a team together and shooting a movie. And that movie has to be stored somewhere, right, digitally. And so the hard drive becomes not just this sort of like inert piece of technology, but a sacred object. And the way that filmmakers deal with workflow is often whether or not the movie survives, right? We're doing a workflow panel, and then at Outfest at 3 o'clock, we'll be doing a panel on distribution and how workflow ties into distribution. Because of course, like, filmmakers are pretty attentive to making sure that every day on set, their content gets uploaded to their very sacred hard drives. But then they forget that workflow continues all the way through distribution. How you're delivering your content is partially determined by what you want to do with it in the first place. And a lot of the work we do at Seed and Spark is helping filmmakers really think strategically about how they want to get their film seen when they're still thinking about how they want to get their film funded.
Well, you've just depressed me with your hard drive story, because I was the lead in a film that was 98% improvised. So I also would have had a co-writing credit, and the whole film got lost. So that's like a film that will never be seen because of a hard drive issue. So
thank you for underlining.
You would have to remind me.
Sorry, but thank you for underlining the paramount importance of the education that we're trying to provide for filmmakers, because this is a story I would like never to hear again, and unfortunately, it's not the first time I've heard it.
Well, also, as the creator of content, I have a 7-year video archives that is now over 20 years old, and I am in the process of digitizing it. But I think people really lose sight of the importance of a really good way of storing data, as you have pointed out.
Yes. I sort of spaced out for a second thinking about some friends recently who lost an entire CF card, and just the panic.
Did they find it?
No.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I think there needs to be a line item for a new crew member that is specifically designed to...
They're called a DIT, and most
is that Director of Technology?
It's Digital Intermediary Technology. It's like I don't actually know what DIT stands for.
Okay, well, it's very important. We know that.
But the DIT is a position that most independent filmmakers don't think they can afford on set, right? And the answer, it's a digital imaging technician. And we're always looking to cut corners in indie films because every dollar you can put on the screen is, another sort of creative addition. And the thing is, like, the creative can be as beautiful as it wants. And if you don't actually save the shots that you've taken, it doesn't matter. So the other thing we're trying to do is just educate filmmakers more broadly so that, particularly if you're a documentary filmmaker and you're a solo show, right? You have to be your own camera person, your own director, and your own DIT. Just giving people the tools and expertise that they need to, to be safe with their data. And it's a really unsexy part of filmmaking, which is why we really make an effort to bring in experts that can help put the importance of this stuff into a broader context. So the panel this afternoon in particular is about why it matters to distribution, which is what every filmmaker wants, right? So if
now,
we
that's
can
tomorrow, right?
I'm sorry, you're right. That's tomorrow. What day is it? I don't even know anymore.
Right. You're in the middle of the film festival, so you never know it. But
That's right. The
panel at Outfest is Friday, July 17th, 2015. Is it at the Directors Guild?
At the Directors Guild at 3 p.m.
Okay, fantastic. So you and your partner, Eve, came up with the idea for Seed and Spark because you were working on a film and you ran out of money. Tell us a little bit more about how that became Seed and Spark.
I have to correct the story a little bit because we didn't run out of money. We didn't run out of money. We needed to raise money to make the movie. We were making a slow, contemplative, independent drama starring all women with no sort of what Hollywood likes to call bankable stars.
And everyone wants to fund those projects.
Exactly. Yeah. Every investor was dying to fund us. Every distributor was saying they really knew who the audience was for this film. And so I had managed to raise $65,000 from who we like to call friends, family, and fools. But we needed $85,000 to shoot this movie in the summer in Maine. We had one window of time in which we could all do it. And we were $20,000 short of our shooting budget. And Kickstarter and Indiegogo had been around a little bit. And our filmmaker friends had heard of it, but our friends' parents hadn't. And it was really important to me that they feel like they could incorporate themselves into the movie. So we got the whole filmmaking team together to talk about what are some creative fundraising strategies. And we landed on something that is familiar to everyone, which is a wedding registry, right? Everyone has participated in the crowdsourcing of a wedding registry. And the cool thing about that is, like, when I go to a wedding registry and I buy the colander, for example, I spin this story in my head about how this couple who I love so much is going to think of me every time they're straining their pasta. May not be true, right? But it is how I feel like I am participating in a material way in their lives. So we put together a wedding registry. We called it the wish list for our film. So rather than saying we need $20,000, we said we need to rent a camera. We need cars. We need bug spray, sunscreen, makeup, prop, curtains, Duvetine, gaff tape. And sent it out to everyone we knew. And this really interesting thing happened. We raised $23,000 in cash out of our own website with a little PayPal link. More importantly, we raised hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans and gifts of locations and goods and services. We had a scene in a film set in Maine that required a lobster bake, right? And on the day of that bake, one of our contributors drove to set with 30 lobsters, live lobsters in a bucket, right? A car dealership loaned us our two picture cars for 6 weeks for no money. And actually, the guy at the car dealership had some opinions about what cars he thought our characters would drive, and we totally agreed with him. So they became not just our contributors, but our creative collaborators. And the film went from looking like, a super low budget indie to a several million dollar film, because some of the locations we were loaned that would have normally cost tens of thousands of dollars a day to rent made us look like a many million dollar film because they were so spectacular. We even rewrote the film in many places to incorporate them.
I love this story. It's very exciting.
But basically what we discovered is a year to the day from when we started shooting, when we premiered the film, and then we went to, 12 or 15 festivals all around the world. Somebody who contributed to that campaign or somebody who knew somebody showed up and brought their friends and were really excited to be there. And when we screened in Maine and in New York, we had, you know, a line down the block and around the corner for standing room only screenings for a movie that distributors were saying didn't have an audience. Right. And this was where.
And it had an audience because so many people had an ownership stake in it.
Exactly. Exactly. But this was also where, well, if we had believed them from the beginning, we never would have made the movie. If we never made the movie, we never would have gone to festivals. If we hadn't gone to festivals, these women who have been, we have been left off the screen for the last 120 years of moving pictures, wouldn't have had the chance to come up to us. And I'm talking about women from ages 15 to 85, coming up to us saying, thank you. I've never seen myself on screen like this, or I never thought I'd see my story on screen like this. Right? So we were able to reveal a gap in the institutional knowledge that they claim to have about the nature of what audiences really want. And that was what started to fuel the genesis of Seed and Spark.
I absolutely love that. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how the concept of Seed and Spark became this powerful platform and how people can use it after this.
And Nicholas Snow Live continues after this.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com.
So I just have to tell you, Emily, because you probably think that that break that I just took is very inane. But the reason that I've inserted that into my show is because I'm going to be inserting some audio. I'm going to be inserting some audio later, so I needed all those paparazzi sounds to make that process easier and for that audio to sound like it's not bizarre. So that was like a little editing tool. So at any rate, one of the things that occurs to me as I look at what you and your team have created is how overwhelming the process of creating this platform could be, because it involves lots of legal issues, lots of technological issues, and all sorts of components that have to come together. So, how did you specifically identify what needed to be done and get it done, and how did you fund the whole process?
Those are lots of answers. So the first is I went to a friend of mine who, worked building websites, and he helped me ideate and build out a wireframe, right? This is like the underwear of a website. It's the thing that happens even before a clickable prototype. And I put that wireframe on an iPad, and I went to Sundance in 2012, which was the first year that Kickstarter, for example, had funded, or 16 films at Sundance had been funded on Kickstarter. And I showed it to anyone who would talk to me. And I tried especially to talk to the filmmakers who'd funded their films through crowdfunding. And I asked people what they thought and what they thought the potential was and what their challenges were. And filmmakers time and time again had the same answer, which is, yeah, it's hard to get it funded, but now that it's funded, distribution is a nightmare. And I also started to learn about the incredible inequity in distribution. Back when we were still distributing on film, distribution companies took on huge costs in moving reels of film around the country. But as we have moved to digital, the percentages and expenses that distribution companies claim have not plummeted with the plummeting price of digital delivery. And so there is we're out of sync with the rate of pace of technological change and the business model. And this is where it's that, you know, even if you achieve the dream and you go to Sundance and you get picked up by Fox Searchlight or Weinstein, nobody will ever, I mean, the creators almost never see a dime out of that money, no matter how well the film does, just because of the way these deals are structured. And I would really like us to move out of the era of the starving artist, because what artists do is as essential to us as, you know, feeding us and giving us shelter. And I would argue that to the end of days, that, you know, science teaches us about the world outside and art teaches us about the world inside. And we've been gathering around the fire to tell stories since we had language, right? So the role of the storyteller is essential to society, and particularly in video content, it's essential to our being able to imagine what we can become. So the idea that filmmakers should be the last in line to get paid for the work that they're making is just preposterous to me. And frankly, the internet does not deliver on its promise if we can't disintermediate the relationship between filmmaker and audience.
That makes complete sense. I want our listeners to know it's seedandspark.com. We have talked about you've mentioned the like Indiegogo and Kickstarter, but you say that you have an 84% success rate that beats the other guys by 2 times or more. Please explain what that's based on.
So projects that start and successfully raise 80% or more of their target. And look, part of the reason that that is true is because we work very closely with every project that comes aboard to make sure they're ready to crowdfund. Crowdfunding is super hard to do well. And most people do what's called friend funding, which is they post a crowdfunding project and they get it out to all the people they already know, and they very rarely break out of people they know, or even just people they know and their friends. Crowdfunding takes a lot of work leading up, and there's a reason that it's two words, it's a compound word, and the first word, crowd, is the more important word. You have to spend a lot of time building your crowd before you can start funding with your crowd. So a lot of the work we do is working with filmmakers to help them understand how to really build a long-term, lasting, sustainable relationship with their audiences. Because of course, do you know what makes an actually independent filmmaker? Is one who doesn't have to ask anybody to make their next movie, who doesn't have to ask anybody to distribute their film, who doesn't have to wait to be picked. And the way that you do that is you develop a relationship with a wide enough audience that you can go directly to them for what you need.
I love this. Another component, and two other. So you have your website also can have followers. A project can have followers, and these followers don't necessarily have to contribute.
That's right.
And then you have a component on your site called Sparks as well. Let's talk about those.
Yeah. So one of the things that struck me when I got into the film business was the kind of culture of scarcity that everybody was operating in, because we're all trying to get picked by the same like small group of people. So if she gets picked, I don't get picked. If he gets funded, I don't get funded. And it creates, you know, it makes of independent film a very kind of solitary, lonely, competitive existence. And that's like, again, not the promise that the internet is supposed to deliver on. And so if we're going to move into a culture of plenty, we need to help filmmakers understand that when they're building audiences for their film, they're building audiences for all independent film. And then audiences to understand that when they fund one film, they're getting access, they're contributing to an environment of many more films getting made. So Sparks are rewards points that you get when you fund, follow, or share a project. that give you access to our library of streaming content. So $25 contribution will get you 250 Sparks, and you can spend those 250 Sparks to watch a feature film on our streaming platform. Why? Well, number one, it takes a long time to get a movie made. So when you fund a film and the filmmaker is offering you, you know, a stream of the film and maybe some perks, it might take, you know, between 6 and 18 months for that to be fully realized. We really wanted the audiences to feel the reward immediately. So we gave them access to other films they could watch and, you know, some intelligence around things they might like to watch on our platform based on what they funded. Similarly, for filmmakers, one of the reasons we want them to fund with us is because they know that they're giving their audience an opportunity to watch the movies made by their peers.
I love that. Well, is there anything you'd like to say about Seed and Spark or your championship of technology that you want to stress again or that we haven't talked about yet?
My stump speech recently for filmmakers especially and artists everywhere is you don't have to wait to be picked. You can decide what you want your career to look like and build it for yourself. All the tools out there are available to you. And then you have to acknowledge that that means you're, you know, the CEO of your own independent creation company and you're building a small business. But for me, if Seed and Spark is successful, it's because we will have given rise to the creative middle class, right? The mom and pop shop creators all across the country that maybe individually couldn't compete with studio films, but why would you want to? Most of them are lousy. But instead, as a collective, working together for our collective independence, are much more powerful than any one of the studios.
I love that. If people are listening to this show before July 17th at 3 p.m. in the year 2015 and you're in L.A., you have a roundtable happening at Outfest. Why don't you tell us again specifically what will be going on at the roundtable?
So at 3 p.m. we will be talking about distribution and the ways in which you are strategizing about it at the very beginning and how that affects how you fund, how you market, how you control your data, all the way through the pipeline. I think too long, you know, it's really hard to get a film made and there are so many obstacles. The first one is like writing a good film. Let's just say like that's the hardest one, right? The second one is funding the film. And the third one is actually getting it through production and then getting it through post and then getting it to festivals and then getting it through distribution. Those are all really hard steps. And it can be hard when you're at the beginning of the process to actually be thinking strategically about what you want at the end, because we're always sort of stuck with the problem that's right in front of us. One of the things that we want to do with Ali Esslinger of Section 2, who is creating a sort of a Netflix for lesbians, with Mia Bruno, who's the producer of marketing and distribution at Seed and Spark, and a couple of other guests yet to be announced. We really want to help filmmakers understand how they can strategically connect the entire process.
I love that. You know, one of the things, and I guess this is could be a good kind of concluding remark and wrap up. Of course, you can chime in, but one of the things that impresses me about what I've learned from you today is that it empowers the filmmakers to become extremely accountable in terms of their budget and what they truly need and how they're going about asking for it. Because I imagine a lot of people that participate in crowdfunding just kind of throw some sort of fund, a dollar amount out there without understanding what that dollar amount means. But anyone that's using your platform to raise funds has had to go through a process where they know specifically why they're asking for money and where it's going to go.
That's right. That's really astute. And I think, you know, we all also have to be accountable to each other for building a new business model that's really sustainable moving forward.
That's fantastic. Seedandspark.com. Any final word?
Go out there and make great movies, and we'll try to take care of the rest.
I love that. I want to really thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. And there's a film at Outfest that you absolutely need to know about. It's called Desert Migration.
I know all about Desert Migration. Okay. I know the filmmakers.
Good. I'm on the documentary features jury, and I just watched it, and I heard your intro, and I thought, if you don't know about it, you must know about it. And it is so beautiful.
I know the filmmaker. I know many of the people in the film. I actually am based in Palm Springs, and this broadcast is originating at the Vista Sunrise Apartments, which is a fantastic complex available for people living with HIV, and it is adjacent to the Desert AIDS Project.
Wonderful. It looks like an amazing community.
And I'm going to pass the news along when I see Daniel, the director, and others that you mentioned it on the show. They're going to be coming on the show at a later date, but that's wonderful. Very cool. And once again, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You can share this episode. I'm going to send Emily the link directly, but in about 5 minutes, this episode will have buffered, and you can share it widely on all your social networks. And until next time, I'm Nicholas Snow.
Did you know I'm an author? At the time of this recording, I have 2 books out. The first, a Living Powerfully with HIV memoir called Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. It takes place throughout Asia and even in Palm Springs. It could be called Eat, Pray, Disclose. The second book, A Return to Brokeback Mountain, photos and interviews from the historic Hollywood premiere. To find these titles, go to NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Books in the main submenu. Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride Festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
In Greater Palm Springs since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at desertbusinessassociation.com.
You've been listening to Nicholas Snow Live. Find all of our advertisers and everything Nicholas Snow at NicholasSnowLive.com. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. Anytime 24/7, you may direct tweet at TheNicholasSnow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. This show is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.